You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Hey guys, it's Allie. Welcome back to In for Life, the podcast. This is episode 273 called Tara Clark. This episode is proudly sponsored by Receptiva DX, a groundbreaking test that has transformed the lives of countless women grappling with recurrent pregnancy loss or IVF setbacks. By identifying inflammatory conditions within the uterus, Receptiva DX offers invaluable insights that could be pivotal in your journey towards conception and sustaining pregnancy. Among its revelations, endometriosis emerges as a prevalent underlying factor, often lurking without obvious symptoms. So guys, listen up. If the path to parenthood has been fraught with challenges, Receptiva DX could hold the key to unlocking answers and tailored treatment approaches. Don't hesitate to initiate a conversation with your healthcare provider about Receptiva DX. It could be the pivotal step towards realizing your dreams of parenthood. The best part? If you ask for the Receptiva DX test and you use code INFERTILEAF24, you'll get $75 off. Again, that's code INFERTILEAF24 for $75 off. Thanks, Receptiva DX. Before we get started, guys, I just want to remind everybody about my new children's book, which is called Work of Art. It is the illustrated version of my family building journey. It's all about assisted reproductive technology, IVF. We touch on secondary infertility. We touch on pregnancy loss, but it's all very palatable for a kid because it is a children's book after all, but it is so cute. I'm really proud of it. And I'd love for you guys to check it out at infertileafgroup.com/books. So thank you so much to everybody who has purchased one so far. We just did a buy one, donate one program, which I'm going to launch again in June, where I donate one copy to a library or school for every copy purchased. So thanks to everybody who took part in that. And definitely check it out if you're interested. I have personalized copies and non-personalized copies. And again, you can find it on my website at infertileafgroup.com/books. Thank you so much. All right, today's guest is an absolutely delightful woman. Her name is Tara Clark, and she is the founder of Modern Mom Probs. So she's going to share with us the story today of her IUI success story. So spoiler alert, this is a success story about IUI. She has a now 11-year-old son, but she's also going to walk us through everything that led up to that. So IUIs that didn't work, unexplained infertility, fibroids, and so much more. So thank you so much to Tara for sharing her story. Without further ado, this is Tara's infertility story. Hi, Tara. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me, Allie.
Good. Thanks so much for doing this. So I want to start where I usually do, which is asking, did you always want to be a mom?
I always wanted to be a mom. I knew probably from when I was a very young age, I always wanted to be a mom. I always babysat all through middle school and high school and even through college. And so I am very maternal. I love being around children. Maybe in a different alternate universe, I would have been a teacher. I wasn't. I work in media, but I actually worked at Nickelodeon because that's how much I love children too. So I had to be part of making excellent children's education.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Did you ever go to the Kids' Choice Awards and get slimed?
So I never went to the Kids' Choice Awards, okay. But my boss always did. And I always had to like make all the preparations for everyone to go. And then I would have to like be stuck in New York and they were all having fun in Santa Monica.
Okay. I actually went to it once with my sister, and it was so, I mean, this is like in the 90s, and Tori Spelling and Brian Austin Green were hosting it. And we like, we're on like the lot. Like we went to like the tour of Paramount Studio and they're like, we're doing an award show. Do you want to come to it? And we were like, yes.
Amazing.
It was like 150 years ago. But anyway, okay. So
that's cool.
Did you know anything about like fertility or like the drop off as you got older growing up? You know, we talk a lot about how, you know, sex education, lack thereof, like comes into play in a lot of people's family building journeys because you just don't really know like what's going on in your body.
Yeah. Well, well said, because I went to Catholic school from kindergarten all the way up through college. And obviously we do have sex ed in Catholic school, but it's very fear-based, if you will. And it was also, I thought that it would be super easy to become pregnant. That was just one thing I feel like that they really emphasized on us. It's like, be careful, because the second you have sex, you're going to get pregnant. Sometimes 100%. You can even get pregnant if you if semen gets onto your underwear. So you have to be very careful all the time.
Oh my God.
Like, okay, yeah, sure. So I grew up thinking that it would be very easy. And so let me share my story, because it goes from being very easy to being very difficult.
Right. Okay. So tell me everything.
So yeah. So my husband and I are high school sweethearts. We did attend the same Catholic school together. Okay. We did not go to the same college though, but we went to the same high school.
That's so funny. Same with me and my husband. Same really? High school, not the same college. Yes.
I love that. So Sam is my husband's name. Sam and I have been together since we were 15. We got married at 26. We had finished college. He finished medical school, but right before he started his residency, we got married and we lived in Livingston, New Jersey.
Hey.
And hey, shout out to Jersey.
Stone's throw away from where I am now.
Yes. And we decided that we weren't going to try to have kids right away, but we wanted to have kids before the age of 30. That was just this like magical number we had in our head. And so that allowed us to travel. And then we lived in the city. So he did his residency in New York City. And we were just living the life, you know, doing the things, being out there, going to dinner and seeing shows and going on vacation, whatever. And then we got serious about wanting to start a family. And so the first time we tried, we got pregnant.
Wow.
Right away. And I was like, oh my God, you know, the nuns were right. This was easy.
Totally.
So, you know, I got pregnant, and at my OB's office, they couldn't see you until you were about 12 weeks. That was like their like intro appointment. So I'll never forget this because it is seared into my brain. Mm-hmm. It was March 23rd, which is my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And my husband was down in Orlando, Florida for a work conference. They often have work conferences down in Orlando. So he's down in Disney World. I'm going in on my birthday for my first OB appointment, and I am so excited.
Right.
I am just beaming. And obviously at this point, we have not told anybody anything about this pregnancy, but I, you know, I felt good and I was like, okay, this is it. This is what it should be. So I go there and my doctor said, oh, there's no heartbeat.
Oh, the worst phrase ever to hear.
And I was like, okay.
I just got the chills, Tara. That's how it's, I still have the PTSD of that.
Yeah. I just got chills. Also,
I just got full body chills. Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry for you. And for anybody listening that has heard that phrase, it is so rough.
Thank you. So I just had to take a second to process that, because I was like, no, that's not the news that I need to be hearing on my birthday. This is not my first doctor's appointment. This isn't it. And so I didn't even know what to do. And I thought like, oh, maybe I should like text my husband. And she said, no, let's call him on the phone together. And I was like, yeah, I guess that's a better idea. Sure. I was just so like clouded. I couldn't think properly.
Yeah. In shock.
Yes. And so she said, let's call him together. And so I remember sitting down in her office. She put him on speakerphone and she called him and we told him the news, and he was just heartbroken. And he said, okay, I'm flying home today. Mm-hmm. No questions asked. Don't worry about it. And so I said, okay, you know, thanks. I appreciate that. I left the doctor's office and I went to work that day.
Wow.
And everyone's like, happy birthday, Tara. Happy birthday. And I was like sitting in my cubicle just on the edge of tears, just trying everything in my power to keep it together. And I think I told my best friend there, my best friend Goldie, I think I told her, she was the only one. And everyone else was just like, oh, and there was another woman that had worked there and she was pregnant at the same time too. And I just, she, you know, it's so hard.
So hard.
Your pregnant coworkers.
Absolutely.
And she wasn't the nicest of people anyway, just as a baseline. So that didn't help the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so all day, I'm just trying to keep it together and trying to keep it together. My husband has to fly home from Orlando, Florida in the airport. In an airport filled with children, toddlers, babies, pregnant women, all of the things that you see at Disney World. And so his heart is just breaking. He bought me a little Minnie Mouse plushie to come home with, and he gave me that. And so I'll speed up the story because this is kind of a long story, so I hope you have time. So I had a DNC for that, and we didn't really know why. My doctor said, you know, sometimes this just happens. It was the first time. It's okay. You know, just try again. And we said, okay. So we waited a few months and we tried again. And guess what? I got pregnant immediately once we tried. And I was like, okay, this is the one. This is the one we're going to do it. So only a few weeks into that, maybe seven or it might have been about 8 weeks or so into that, I had a miscarriage at home. And I was like, son of a gun. Thank you. And that one was like, so hopeful. Cause again, I just was like, this is it. They just keep saying, just keep trying and keep trying. And so I had a miscarriage.
How old were you at the time?
29.
Okay.
29. I was 29.
So still young.
Yeah. I'm still young. Yeah. No. I mean, at that point, age was not really a factor. Right. So, the second one, I had a miscarriage at home. So then they said, okay, try again. Just keep trying. It's going to work. And so the third one, we conceived, this was like a dream come true. We conceived this baby in the Bahamas at Atlantis in our hotel room with the doors open and the breeze blowing.
Right.
It was like something out of a movie. This is the baby. This is the one
that's universe has come together. Yes.
Definitely. Yes. This is it. And so I get pregnant from that one. I'm like, this is it. This is how you know it's going to work. And so again, I go into the doctors at 12, maybe 13, 14 weeks or so, go in for my appointment. And they say yet again, oh, actually no, this one, they said the baby is not growing the way that it should be. And we don't think we see a heartbeat. It was a combination of the baby wasn't where it should be and we're not really detecting great signs of life.
Yeah.
And so they sent me to like a specialist to get like a special ultrasound, which was like higher tech ultrasound than the standard ultrasound. And that's when they said that this baby is not tracking properly.
Okay. Yeah.
And so then I think,
how many weeks along were you at that point?
I think that was like 14. And it wasn't tracking well. And ultimately, again, then it didn't have a heartbeat. And at that point, we were just exhausted.
Devastated.
Devastated. And exhausted and devastated.
And were you like, okay, what's going on? We need to see a specialist now.
That was the point at which our doctor said, you know, she was like, I tap out. Like, now you need to see a specialist. And so they tested me for like lupus and all different things. I went to a specialist and I had fibroids. And so that's what was causing the issues in the miscarriages. And so I also let me backtrack just for a quick second. With the third miscarriage, I had to go and get another DNC. And that morning I went into the hospital, and anytime you have to go in for a procedure, there is a nurse who will ask you to take a pregnancy test.
Right.
And I remember sitting there waiting to get my DNC. And she was like, did you get your pregnancy test yet? And I was like,
oh my God,
no. And like, my heart just shattered. And my husband was so furious. And he was like, absolutely not. Like, he essentially was like, get out of here with that.
Yeah.
And it just broke my heart because
that's,
it was like,
so
just
heartbreaking.
Take a second to read my file.
Look at the chart. I know.
Look at my chart to see why I'm here.
100%.
it would have taken 30 seconds for her to look down and see why I was here. And
oh my gosh,
no, I didn't take a pregnancy test. And so that broke my heart. And so
yes,
I had a DNC for that. And at that point, we were starting to think, you know, is this even worth it? Like, is this going to keep happening? We're not sure. And so that was the point. Then we saw the specialist who diagnosed me with fibroids. And he said, okay, let's clean these up. So I went in for another procedure, cleaned out the fibroids. And then he said, okay, now let's try again.
They were saying the fibroids were preventing them, the babies, from growing.
Correct.
Okay.
That's what it was. So even for the third baby, we were able to have her tested and we know that she would have been a girl. So she was large enough to be able to determine the sex at that point. Mm-hmm. The first mm-hmm. two, maybe not so much. And maybe that's not what we did for the DNC, but for the third one, we do know that she would have been a girl.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so they were implanting, they just weren't growing because of the fibroids. And
Got
so
it.
That was what was preventing them.
Mm-hmm.
So have the fibroids removed. Then my husband and I say, we need to take some time on this. And we just need to evaluate like our entire lives. Like we're not really sure what, you know, what is day and night and up and down and all
totally.
Of the different things. And so from a time perspective, the third miscarriage in DNC happened right around my 30th birthday. So I turned 29, the first one. And then, you know, a few weeks later, then I had the second one. And I say weeks, but it would have been months later. Months later, had the second one. And then we waited a little bit of time. My 30th birthday rolled around. At my 30th birthday, I was pregnant, not drinking. Nobody knew. Everyone else was drinking around me. And a week later, I think, or very shortly after that, then we found out about that baby.
Mm.
And so
so
needed
sorry.
To take time. Thank
yeah.
you. I appreciate it. And so we needed to take time. It was
a lot. Yeah, because you have to grieve as well, right?
We had to grieve and we had to, like I said, reevaluate things. And it was like, it was so easy to get pregnant and then so hard to keep the pregnancies. That was
totally.
My problem. I wasn't keeping the pregnancies.
That's, yeah, I went through that as well.
And it was devastating. And we had no support system. We didn't tell our friends or family. Some of our very closest friends knew. We did not tell our family. That was a personal choice.
Mm-hmm.
And we just felt like we were all alone and mm-hmm. we had no one to talk to. And social media 15 years ago was not what it is now.
Right.
And
exactly.
People were not talking about this online. People were not having these conversations. And I felt so alone, so alone.
Mm-hmm.
And so we took a year off from trying. We took a year off from just about everything. And then we thought like, oh, maybe we're just going to be one of those couples that live in New York City, you know, like a date,
right.
like, you know, like dual income, no kids kind of thing, which is totally fine.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
That's obviously a fine lifestyle and one that we considered. But then we said, you know, let's try again. We still needed time. It was just like a lot of medical procedures and it was a lot of pain and emotional just being in your feelings with this all the time, you know? And so that's why we just needed to take a break because it was the hope and then the letdown and the hope and then the
right.
letdown. And it was just too much of the roller coaster of emotions.
Right.
So we took time off. We went to Italy. We had an amazing trip and
okay.
you know, started to enjoy ourselves again because for a year and a half, we just simply were not enjoying ourselves because of that roller coaster of emotions.
Because it's so all encompassing, like you said. Yeah,
it was. So we decided to try again. So we're seeing a fertility specialist in Manhattan, and then we have unexplained infertility.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, what? Wait, what? What? This is the exact opposite of what was happening. So we were trying and trying and trying and trying and trying, and nothing was happening. And we're like, this was the exact opposite of what was happening with the first three tries. So now we're really shaking our head because we're like, how can you go from the one thing to nothing that we were doing?
Yes. And the frustration of them not being able to diagnose. I mean, I get it. There's so many factors and, you know, the doctors can't find everything. And especially, you know, so many years ago, things were different then. There weren't a lot as many tests and all that. But that unexplained infertility diagnosis is really frustrating because it's like, well, where do we even start? Like, where do we even begin? It's almost like on one hand, if there is some sort of diagnosis, something to tackle, at least there's a plan and at least there's, you know, maybe a possible light at the end of the tunnel. But unexplained, I feel like can feel very like rudderless. Like you're like, where do we, what do we do?
Yeah. It's just, rudderless is the best phrase for that, best word for that, because that's how I felt. I felt very broken because I went from being able to conceive, but not being able to carry to not being able to conceive. And then I have no idea what's going to happen.
Right.
And so that was extraordinarily frustrating.
Yeah. So what did you do? Where did you guys turn?
So we're going to this fertility specialist and he says, okay, let's try IUI. So I started going there very early in the mornings and God bless the fertility specialists who open up at 6 o'clock in the morning.
I know.
So that you could go there before work or you could go there with your day. And I finally felt like I belonged when I was sitting in that office. And I saw other women like me who were having difficulty conceiving or carrying. And I thought, oh, I'm not alone. I'm not the only one that's going through this right now. And so we tried 3 rounds of IUI.
Okay.
And the doctor said, this is the last round. And if you can't do, if this doesn't work, if this doesn't take, then we're going to have to do IVF. And my husband and I were like, but we were conceiving and then we weren't carrying. And now that the fibroids are gone and we should, in theory, be able to carry, now we can't conceive and now we have to turn to IVF. Like our minds were blown, you know?
Yeah,
and
totally.
So luckily, the third round of IUI worked and I had my son, Jack. And
wow.
He was born, yes, in November of 2012. And he had a, you know, I had a great pregnancy with him. I was a nervous wreck the entire time. Cause like I said, I initially wasn't able to carry, you know, for the baby wasn't growing because of the fibroids. And so I kept him a secret. I didn't announce my pregnancy until I was a solid 20 months.
Right. Can you talk a little bit more about that? The anxiety that you feel and just the like wanting to keep it close to the vest because
Yeah.
It's scary, right? Tell me a little bit more about what was going through your mind.
It's very scary. So I was playing all of the pregnancies close to my chest just because that's sort of how I am as a person. But with Jack, particularly because we had the hopes, the highs and the lows with the other three, I didn't want to tell anybody about him until I was like well into my pregnancy.
Yeah.
And luckily, I wasn't really showing until I was 20 something months anyway. So by the time I shared the news, people were like, oh, congratulations. Oh yeah. I guess you do kind of look pregnant. And I was like, yeah, I am. And I was wearing a lot of very like flowy blouses. At that point, I was still working at Nickelodeon.
Right.
Actually this entire time I was, you know, this entire story, as I'm telling you this, I was working at Nickelodeon.
Okay.
And I was just wearing very like blousy top from Forever 21 and all of that kind of stuff. And so people didn't really like think much about it until I announced it. And they were like, oh yeah, okay. I could see that.
Right.
But I was a nervous wreck. I was a nervous wreck the entire time because I wanted to make sure that he stayed with me.
Of course.
And that he grew properly and he was healthy and he was good. He was breech. So he was a scheduled C-section, which ironically I was also a C-section, but you know, 40 years ago, my mom labored for 48 hours. And then I was like a crash C-section.
Okay.
Technology and medicine was different then. So I don't know, maybe we have something special with our uteruses, but
yes, I had a scheduled C-section because of breech and placenta previa as well.
Yeah. So he was born on a Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock in the morning at Mount Sinai Hospital.
Okay.
And he was, you know, he was great. And so it was scary. And I also remember when I found out, you know what? You're not going to believe this. And I was just thinking about this as I'm saying it. I found out that I was pregnant with Jack on my birthday, March 23rd.
Oh, wow.
In 2012. And the next day, we were scheduled to go to Argentina for a work trip for my husband. He was attending like a world conference in Argentina, and we had plans, you know, for that for a while. And he was like, "You want to come?" And I was like, "Of course I want to come to Argentina." But the entire time I was down there, I was a nervous wreck
because
it's a very long flight to Argentina. Red wine is very popular down there. And so everyone's like, "Oh, drink, drink." And I was like, "No, thank you. No, thank you. I'm good." And so I think that sort of was tipping some people off.
Sure.
Because like when you're in this sort of like once in a lifetime location where people are drinking the wine, I was like, "No, no, no, I'm good." But I remember just being so cautious. And we went horseback riding, and I don't love horseback riding, truth be told. And I'm on this horse. I'm on the horse for maybe 15 seconds. And I'm like, "Ayúdame, ayúdame, like help me, like get me off this horse." I like, cause I was worried that I was going to fall off and then, you know, ruin everything that we worked so hard for.
Of course.
And so then they got me off the horse and I think they put me in some sort of like wagon in the back or something.
Yeah. You're like, "I'll ride in the wagon. Thank you very much."
I rode in the wagon with like the elderly women on the trip. But, but I still to this day think about that. Cause I was like, "God forbid I would have fallen off the
horse." I remember I had to go on a hike for a work trip too. I was interviewing a celebrity and it was for Health Magazine and she wanted to go on a hike and it was I was newly pregnant with my IVF baby. And I remember thinking, "Oh my God, if something happens on this hike," cause it was really hot and we were like hiking, it was pretty hard. And like, she didn't want to stop. And I was like, "Oh my God." And I remember calling my doctor when after the hike and I was like, "I think something's going to happen," you know? And he was like, talked me off the ledge, but it is scary, especially after going through so much and putting so much into it and working so hard. I love hearing an IUI success story, by the way. That's awesome. Yeah.
Thank you. We were close to being an IVF baby, but it worked.
Right.
And it's just wild. Like when I sit down and tell this story from beginning to end and tell you all of these details, because many times when I share the story with someone, it's the abridged version, right?
Sure.
It's the 2-minute version of we suffered, you know, 3 miscarriages and we had IUI and we had our son. And I don't get to tell you all of like the little nuggets and the little pieces. And then another thing too, is that Jack's an only child and there were several factors that led to him being an only child. But one of the biggest ones is this: one morning at 6 a.m. in the fertility doctor's office, we were in the waiting room, my husband and I, and we looked at each other and we said, "If we have this baby, if this works and we have a healthy child, we will never ask for anything ever again. Mm-hmm. We will never ask for anything as much as we're asking for this right now."
Yeah.
And
I get
you know what? And it worked. And that's when, you know, we're like making pleads with heaven and stuff
totally.
Like that.
Totally. All the deals. Yeah.
All the deals, making all the deals. And it worked. And then that was it. And then we said, "That's it." No, that we kept our word
done.
On that.
Yeah.
And we said,
"Right,
that was it." And well, I'm an only child and he's an only child. I love an only child. And so
yeah. And it's great that you felt like your family was complete then, right? I mean, that's, you know, everybody obviously is different and has different notions of what they want their family to be. And I get it. That's great. I love it.
I think that had we not had the journey that we did, and we would have, you know, gotten pregnant traditionally the first time and it would have worked, I do think that we would have had 2 children. Maybe 3. I don't know. I might be pushing it if I say 3, but I do think that we would have had 2 children.
Yeah.
But because of our journey to parenthood, the windy path that it took and the time that we were in that office and we said, "We'll never ask for anything ever again."
Yeah.
That's part of the reason that solidified it for us.
Absolutely. So does Jack know how he was born? Have you talked to him about it or will you?
I think we will when he gets older, because at 11 now, it's still sort of like, you know, a little sensitive, you know, like all the sex talk and all that kind of stuff. I mean, he knows we've had the sex talk with him. But no, we haven't yet, but I think he would. And obviously, if he listens to this podcast, then he'll hear the entire story.
That's right. Absolutely. Well, someday you can sit when you're ready, you could play it for him. Well, that's wonderful. So let's end on a note of you telling people who might be listening, you know, if people are in the thick of it, you know, having a hard time, what do you know now about your journey that you wish you knew when you were going through it?
Oh, there's probably 1,000 things, Allie. But I think a big thing is that you're not the only one going through this. And now sometimes that's cold comfort because you're like, yeah, okay, thanks. Well, that doesn't really help me. When I'm at my OB's office and I'm sitting in the room by myself and I'm hearing babies cry and I'm hearing pregnant women outside the door. And like, that was
so hard.
And that happened to me many times and it's devastating.
I still get triggered by this Pampers commercial that was playing all through my infertility journey, that like, it was like a newborn baby. And I was just, it was like constantly on. And I was like, yes. I couldn't avoid it. I still see a Pampers commercial today and I get like physical reaction.
Yes. No, I totally understand. Even at our fertility office, they had a sign on the desk that said like, if you have other children, please refrain from bringing them into the office. And I always respected that so much. I thought that was very considerate of others going through the journey. But my advice would be reach out to other people who have gone through this. Find your people. Talk to your people. Share your story. It took me at least 7 years, Allie, for me to tell my story publicly or for me to share my story at all.
Why?
I told you, I didn't have friends and family that I needed distance. I needed time and I needed space and I needed for me to make peace with all of the pain and all of it that went, that we went through, my husband and I went through together for this. Mm-hmm. And it took me a very long time to be able to share the story. And now obviously here we are and I could say it freely and I'm comfortable talking about it, but I was not for a very, very long time.
I understand. I was the same for at least a couple of years. Yeah. I mean, I could talk about it with friends, but I wasn't ready to like go public and like create my platform and all that stuff. It took a minute. I get it.
Yeah. And so time definitely helps that. And not that I would say, you know, time heals all wounds, because it doesn't. Because sometimes I think like, oh gosh, like, you know, that first baby would be in high school now. Mm-hmm. And like, that's crazy to me. Like sometimes you think about, for years, I would think about, for two of those babies, they would have been born in October. And anytime October hit, I sort of felt sad thinking about the babies that would have been around and celebrating their birthdays around that time.
Even now, so many years later.
Now I'm better about it because my son's birthday, Jack's birthday, is in November. So now I look forward to his birthday. But October is Miscarriage Awareness Month. And I thought, gosh, the irony of having these babies that, you know, should have been born in October. And so that is partly why I often think about them in October too. Well, I thought about them beforehand and then I learned about Miscarriage Awareness Month after the fact, but it is definitely tied. But find your community, find your people. If you feel comfortable sharing, share about it, learn, you know, through other people's stories, learn about the different things that are available to you from a resource perspective. You know, I think a lot of things for me is that I didn't know what the resources were. I didn't know I had polyps or fibroids. Like, I didn't know what this
Right, like, what's a fibroid?
Was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't
never heard know about that until you had it, right?
Absolutely. It was not even on my bingo card, you know, so to speak.
Totally.
Until it was. And then it was like the center of my bingo card.
Right.
But that's, you know, that's a really big part of it. I think that my husband and I suffered in silence for such a long time. But again, 15 years later, now things are different. And it's not, you know, I don't want people to suffer in silence the way that we did.
Okay, thank you so much to everybody for listening. Thank you again to Tara for sharing her story. Definitely check out Modern Mom Probs if that's something that you are interested in. And again, please check out my book, which is called Work of Art, and it can be found on my website at infertileafgroup.com/books. There's personalized copies, non-personalized copies. I would love to get it in your hands so you can share it with your family, your friends, anybody who's had a kid through assisted reproductive technology, anybody who wants to have a kid through ART, or anybody who's just curious about it. So thank you so much for listening. I will talk to you guys soon. Again, check it out at infertileafgroup.com/books, or you can always DM me or follow me at infertileafstories as well on Instagram. Thank you.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit Hyland.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.